We generally only think about the stuff on our head when we're having a bad hair day, but as Kurt Sten shows in his book, Hair, A Human History, hair has played a crucial role in fashion, the arts, sports, commerce, forensics, and industry. His book takes readers on a global journey from fur merchant associations and sheep farms to medical clinics and patient support groups to show the remarkable impact that hair has had on human life. Kurt Sten is the author of the new book, Hair, A Human History, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe.
Very nice to have you. What got you thinking about hair to the point that you wanted to write a book about it?
Well, I've spent most of my life doing research on hair in an academic and industrial setting, and it wasn't so long ago that I was sitting in my barber chair, and my barber asked me what I do, and I said I do research on hair, and he was taken back. He was taken back. Unbelievable that anyone could take hair so seriously. And when I asked a neighbor about the same thing, I asked a neighbor about wool and hair, the neighbor couldn't quite understand what the relationship of hair was to wool or hair was to fur. And in fact, hair is a fiber which arises from all mammals, and all mammals have hair, and man has had a very productive relationship with hair on his own body and hair in animals. So I decided this was a good reason to write a book, and it was an exciting opportunity. And so I updated my passport and traveled around the world searching hair, both a wig maker in London, a hair jewelry factory in Independence, Missouri, a fur organization in Montreal, a museum in Paris on the anthropology of hair, a cloth weaver in Donegal, Ireland, a FBI forensics laboratory in Virginia. So then these stories are developed in the book.
You spent 2 decades at Yale Medical School and then found a research department within the skin division at Johnson & Johnson that studied the hair follicle and its diseases. And so you were considered one of the foremost hair experts in the world. What makes you interesting is that you have experience in academia, large pharma, as well as biotechnology cultures. The fact that you're the guy, what does that say about our overall knowledge of hair? Because it seems, and even you get this idea in the book, that we just sort of take it for granted.
Joe, that is my point. That is my very point. And I was trying to make that in the book over and over again. I think my barber certainly considered it that way, and many people like my barber, bleed the same thing. The hair has been a very, very important part of our life because it communicates so much of who we are. And when something goes wrong with hair, most of us are pretty upset. But understanding how hair does what it does is something that's a major challenge. And hair is a very complex organ. It is an organ like a finger or a toe, and that it has very complex rules for forming it. And all the rules we don't understand. We are slowly getting insight into the molecular biology of the structure. And in fact, the hair follicle, because it shows properties of regeneration and growth like the finger and the toe, has been used as a model in modern biological laboratories around the world. The hair follicle stem cell in particular has been given a lot of attention.
There are so many fascinating things in this book, it's hard to know where to start. But let me just throw out a couple of words and let you respond to them. In things that, again, we just take for granted. You write in the book about cowlicks. Now, I've heard about these all my life. I certainly have experienced more than a few. But the science of a cowlick is very interesting.
It is. So a cowlick is a whorling pattern on the back of the head of many people. Some people is more prominent than others. The cowlick actually represents a bigger problem in the biology of hair, in that hair is very patterned. And I'll come back to the cowlick. But hair from site to site on the human body is very different. So the eyebrow hair is different from the eyelash. And the hair on the face in a male is very different from the hair on the chest. So hair differs from site to site. The question is, why does hair differ from site to site? What is controlling that? And that's a big, big problem we have. The problem is replacing hair for people who don't want it, giving the type of hair they want. For instance, if a woman wants hair from back on her eyebrow because she lost her eyebrows, often that hair is taken from the scalp and transplanted to the eyebrow. And the hair that's transplanted to the eyebrow believes he's still in the scalp, so he grows long. And if we could understand how to control that characteristic of hair, that would be really powerful. So the cowlick is this whorl pattern on the back of the head, and what has been significant is that the cowlick is often associated with right and left-hand dominance. So the cowlick that goes to the right is usually the person who is right-handed. And that is interesting because that has nothing to do with the skin, you would think. It has to do with the brain, which is the right-handed brain. In addition, sometimes the cowlicks are very aberrant looking. They look like a figure eight or something different. And those are associated with major abnormalities in the brain below them. So there's a crosstalk, apparently, between the hair follicle and the neural system brain, which is fascinating, and we don't understand it.
You talk about in the book that if someone suffers from reduced hair growth, which is a nice way of saying it, but reduced hair growth, you say that one of the reasons could be exposure to prolonged sound. Well, how does that work?
Oh, yeah. These are studies with stress, actually. And it has been recognized for a long time that stress may affect hair growth. In fact, in the book, I relate a story of a short story of Poe, where a sailor gets stuck in a whirlpool of the ocean called a maelstrom. And although he makes it out, he's been so scared, the next day he has white hair. Now, occasionally we see that clinically as well, that a patient after severe trauma, being scared or after surgery or an automobile accident, will lose the pigmented hair, leaving white hair. And this is probably related to the question of alopecia areata. But reproducing this in a laboratory, the shock that affects hair in the laboratory has been done with the mouse. The human, less so, but what happens in the mouse is the mouse is put in an environment with sound, and the sound is an irritant or a stress. And that same mouse, if it's a female mouse pregnant, will have less pups if the stress is occurring. So the stress is real, and when the stress is applied, the growing hair follicle is induced to rest, stop growing. So those are the experiments. So we believe that stress has a real effect on the hair follicle, but it's not directly on the hair follicle, it's through the neural system or the hormonal system.
When my parents passed away and we were going through their belongings, they had envelope after envelope. There were five of us children, and they had an envelope for each of us for our first haircut, a lock of our hair. That hair lasts a long time, doesn't it?
It's so precious. That's such a precious thing to do. Many people do that, and hair people believe hair identifies the person from who the hair came. And hair can be very valuable. A lock of hair of Abraham Lincoln was auctioned for a lot of money, as well as some generals from the Civil War. But the association of hair with people is very important and occurs in all cultures. And hair demands a respect that is really unusual. I mean, you don't have the freedom to touch someone's hair. Hair is very personal, unless you're given permission to do that. And in the past, hair has been used to represent a person and have been put in very complex jewelry or artistic designs to represent the person. So this Museum of Hair Jewelry, which is present in Independence, Missouri, there are hundreds and hundreds of one of the largest collections in the world of really, really very emotional stories of people, loved ones who are lost, but the hair is there and the loved one is kept. The story is that Queen Victoria lost her husband Albert when he was a fairly young man, and she kept locks of his hair in her jewelry to remember him as a part of him. So he never really died for her. He was there in the hair.
When it comes to, as I said, there are so many facts in the book that are really interesting. And you talk about the famous hair hang act that we see often in circuses and various demonstrations, and that's a real thing. The hair is that strong.
The hair is amazingly strong, and the hair hang act does demonstrate that an individual hair can hold many pounds of weight. So the hair hang act occurs because the hair is so strong, but it's also hair is very strongly moored into the skin, and so the concern of the hair hang act is not the hair itself and the hair mooring, but on the neck. So in the 2014 in the Ringling Brothers Circus Act, the hair hang act was going on. I think there were five or seven women being raised, and they fell. And they fell. The hair was intact, but the ceiling was not. It really illustrates the strength of the hair and its attachments. Very, very strong structure.
When we were talking about taking hair for granted, and that was one of the reasons for writing the book, so what do you hope that, I guess, what can we do to take our hair for granted and to understand its power?
This is the future of hair care, the understanding hair power. I think that to appreciate that hair, what hair is, and how hair has served its role, I think the question implies styles and the expression that hair gives, that hair is important for the expression of one person to another, and it's very important that the person who composed the style, the hairdo, is communicating with someone who understands it. And in throughout history, it was very important that the hair arrangement conformed to whatever message the person wanted to send. So I think understanding the sensitivity of hair, that hair is so important in these messages, is very important for the health of hair.
What do you hope people get out of the book in understanding their hair and the hair of other people?
Appreciation that hair is much more than what's on your head, mm-hmm. and that hair sends messages, that hair has been used by man in many industries and to help man live a better life in wool, fur, forensics, art, and as a memorial. Hair has a complex history, but it also is a beautiful and glorious way of talking to one another and expressing oneself.
Kurt Sten is the author of the new book, Hair, A Human History. It is published by Pegasus Books. Kurt, thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure. Thank you for sharing your expertise.
Joe, thanks so much. All best.
Very nice to have you with us. Again, the name of the book is Hair, A Human History by Kurt Sten. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.